I'm going to turn to the second book of Samuel. I'm going to read from the third chapter, starting at the 17th verse. 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 17. Now Abner had communicated with the elders of Israel, saying, "In time past you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistine and the hand of all their enemies.' And Abner also spoke in the hearing of Benjamin. Then Abner also went to speak in the hearing of David in Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel and the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner and 20 men with him came to David at Hebron. And David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. Then Abner said to David, 'I will arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires.' So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. At that moment, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. Then Joab and all the troops that were with him had come. They told Joab, saying, 'Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he sent him away, and he has gone in peace.' Then Joab came to the king and said, 'What have you done? Look, Abner came to you. Why is that you sent him away, and he has already gone? Surely you realize that Abner the son of Ner came to deceive you, to know you're going out and you're coming in, and to know all that you are doing.' And when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, who brought him back from the well of Sirah. But David did not know it. Now when Abner had returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him privately, and there stabbed him in the stomach, so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Afterward, when David heard it, he said, 'My kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there never fail to be in the house of Joab one who has a discharge or is a leper, who leans on a staff or falls by the sword, or who lacks bread.' So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had killed their brother, Asahel, at Gibeon in the battle." And I pray that later on God will give us instruction from that text. The one thing about the Bible is that it isn't a book of sweet sentiment. It gives us a very clear picture of the human heart. So we'll look at that later on. Let's consider now the passage we read. We ought to have a little context. There are two rival kingdoms in Israel, one of which David is king, the other of which there is a counterfeit, Ish-bosheth, a son of Saul, but not appointed to the kingdom by God. And behind the throne of the rival kingdom is a powerful man called Abner. A wily kind of character. Perhaps not entirely trustworthy. And yet in the passage, immediately before, he appears to have a change of heart. He seems to abandon Ish-bosheth and makes an offer to David to join him, to be subject to him, to be a part of his kingdom. And we need to judge for ourselves as best we can the sincerity of his heart. We're told in verse 17 but Abner sends a message out to the elders, that is the leaders of Israel, who have not yet submitted to David. And he says to them, "In time past you were seeking for David to be king over you. Now then, He's recalling them. He's making them remember the time when everyone knew that David would be king. Well, that time has come. You talked of bowing the knee to him. Now bow the knee, acknowledge him as your king. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel. This is quite some speech coming from Abner. You would not have thought that just a few verses before, he is David's enemy. Now, I ought to say that I think Abner has sincerely changed his mind. I think he has actually been converted. And that's what the grace of God does. It takes people who have previously hated him and it changes them. I think of the Apostle Paul. He was a murderer, a violent thug, attacking and killing the churches. And he was wonderfully won over by God's grace. And I think, and you're welcome to disagree with me, and you could perhaps find evidence in the text, I don't know. I think it's genuine. And here he's encouraging the people to bow the knee to David, partly because God has appointed him king. And so it would seem that Abner has a clear knowledge of the purposes of God for his time. Now, some might suggest maybe his motives are not very clear. He is a man of dubious character. But I think he really has had a conversion, and I think the text would support that. Notice at the end of verse 18, things seem to be going very well for David. His kingdom is expanding. People are drifting to him to obey him, and even Abner, the man in charge of his opponent's army, seems to be bowing the knee. And yet even in God's appointed kingdom, times of success and joy are often followed by tragedy. And I've been around long enough to know that even in churches where things seem to be going so well, there often seems to be problems following on. And so we have in our text today. Abner seems to be quite the evangelist. Not only is he willing to submit to David, but he wants others to do it as well. You know, in deep inside the heart of every converted Christian, there is a desire to share Christ. Some people find treasure and they hide it and keep it to themselves because that treasure is cheap. We sang before, you can heap up your gold, you can receive your honours, but then it will do you no good. Christ for me. Yet when you have that pearl of great price, you have Christ in the heart, you will others to partake of the joy which he offers. In verse 19, we're told, and Abner spoke in the hearing of Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin. And Abner also went to speak in the hearing of David at Hebron. All that seemed good to Israel and the whole house of Benjamin. Evidently, David has checked him out. Now, David is not very active in this passage. He responds to events. He's not the main player, as it were. And yet, I think that he's no fool. And whereas Joab doubts Abner's sincerity, I'm sure David did as well. And David, I think, in verse 19, has gone to check him out. And there's an important message here for us. Just because somebody claims to be a prophet or an apostle or a Mr. This or a Mr. That doesn't mean they are. Is Abner the real McCoy? Or is he a counterfeit? Well, I think David has heard the man and satisfied himself that he is genuine. Abner and 20 men then come to David formally at Hebron. And I believe that is the point at which they formally acknowledge David as their overlord. They renounce Ish-bosheth and his kingdom, and they submit to David. And when you become a Christian, you submit. Yes, you are, you're freed. And you're freed to serve. Often people will talk about, as I did this morning, when you're saved, you're released from slavery. And yet does not the apostle often describe himself as the bondservant, the slave of Christ? And so really, a better metaphor, which might not sit very comfortably with us, is that we're one master, a new master has bought us, because here we are to serve. And here Abner acknowledges the lordship of another man. And David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. So David formally welcomes him into the kingdom. And here we have a glimpse, not only of an evil man receiving a king's mercy, but being welcomed by that king as a friend. Likewise in the gospel, the king whom we have offended and reviled, and against whom we've rebelled, he doesn't just suffer us to return. He kills the fatted calf, and he comes down from the rooftop, and he embraces us and welcomes us back. And he puts a ring on our finger, and new clothes and sandals on our feet. Abner is a prodigal returned. And each one of us, when we came to Christ, through that prodigal who has returned back to where we should have been to start with. And Abner tells David in verse 21, I will arise and go and gather all Israel to my Lord the King, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. So David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. That going away in peace, I think, means he went in security. He was offered safe conduct. He was an enemy agent just a few weeks ago, but David gives him the freedom to come and go. Why? Because he's doing David's work. Again, there's a wonderful picture here in Abner. He has not been content to receive David's mercy. He wants to share it with others. He could just have, you know, sat by at Hebron, enjoying life, enjoying the new relationship. He's now friends with David. No, he wants to go out that others might be friends with David. He wants David's kingdom to increase. He goes out as an evangelist, as a witness to what God is doing at Hebron. When we receive the mercy of God, we have a desire to share it. Notice also what Abner says. That you, David, may reign over all your heart desires. Abner is acting so that David may reign. Whereas previously, under Ish-bosheth, he was acting that he might reign through this puppet king. And there's the difference in Abner. He has changed. And before we come to Christ, we often think that, you know, we're in charge, we're in control, we act for ourselves. But when you become a Christian, you stop living for self. Your own ambitions are cheap and tawdry, except they give glory to Him. Abner is working for another's glory now, and not his own. And yet, ironically, Abner's life has never been so much worth living than it is here. And so we have something of a drama. In verse 21, Abner goes out, in verse 22, Joab comes in. At that moment, the servants of David and Joab came from a raid and brought much spoil with them. Another victory for David. Things are going really, really well. Abner has been won over to the cause. Here comes Joab. Joab, where have you been? Well, we went on a raid. Look what we brought you. We brought you supplies. We brought you gold. This is looking good. God is blessing us, David must think. And it's a very busy little kingdom at Hebron. As one party goes out to expand the kingdom, another one comes in having done the same thing. And yet remember, it's often during times of prosperity that the serpent lurks unnoticed. Think of that wonderful prosperity we enjoyed in Eden. But the serpent was there. Think of the adulation of the crowds when Christ enters Jerusalem. Wonderful! But within a few days, they're crying for him to be crucified. I think of Victorian England as a real golden age of British Christianity, and it was. And yet it was during that time that the seeds were being sown that resulted in the poor state of the church today. And here we have at Hebron what appears to be a great time of prosperity, yet by the time we get to the end of the passage, a man has been killed and another has been cursed. But Abner was not with David because David had sent him away and he'd gone in peace. And then Joab in verse 23 is told that Abner has been won over. What's Joab's response? Praise the Lord? Nope. He doesn't record his emotion, but I'm pretty certain that in verse 24, Joab is in a rage. He goes into the king and says, "What have you done?" He's challenging David's authority. He thinks David has made a terrible mistake. What on earth have you been playing at? Do you not realise what you've just done? And then he gives a reason. Look, Abner came to you. Why is it that you sent him away? In other words, what David should have done, according to Joab, is loaded him with shackles and thrown him in the dungeon. He's a dangerous man. You mean you could have captured him and now you've let him go? Surely you realise that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you. Now, Joab, of course, might be right here. We know that looking at Abner's past, he is this manipulative character. He wanted David dead a chapter or so ago. He is the power behind the rival throne. And let's also be honest as well. The trigger which caused him to abandon Ishbosheth was a concubine. It wasn't a flashing light on the road to Damascus. And so Joab proposes that Abner's motives are foul. He simply came to see David to check he's going in and he's going out. How many troops does he have? Where are they based? How well supplied are they? And now he's going off to Ishbosheth to share all that wonderful intelligence. Oh, Abner, what a clever man. And it would indeed be characteristic of such a wily operator to have pulled off such a trick. And we are to watch out for being deceived. The Lord Jesus said in Matthew 24:24, "For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. In other words, these false prophets and messiahs, which Jesus foresaw, will of course deceive the world. But if possible, even those whom God has called and done a work in the heart, even they might be led astray. Well, there are false messiahs and false prophets aplenty, it must be said. So is Joab right? Well, I think David has vetted him and tried him and sent him out again. And yet we need to look not just at the motives of Abner, but the motives of Joab. Is Joab really using his discernment? Is he really maintaining a watchman ministry? Or is he looking out for himself? In verse 26 we're told, not how David responded, by the way. David's response is not recorded. And when Joab had gone from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, who brought him back from the well of Sirah. Now this well was possibly only a few miles north of Hebron. It talks about the moment Abner left, Joab arrived. And there are two things we can possibly comment on that. We know that Abner has offered to go to the northern tribes and he set off in a northerly direction. So far, so good. Yet it's also interesting that when Abner receives this message, he does obey it. This is not a man accustomed to obeying kings. When Ish-bosheth tries to lay down the law about the concubine, Abner has none of it. And yet when Abner receives a message, perhaps purportedly from David, he meekly obeys and comes to his death. And the writer makes it clear, but David did not know it. In other words, Joab is operating on his own authority. Exactly who is Joab serving? We have a role reversal here. Joab is becoming an Abner. And Abner has become that faithful warrior that Joab has so far been. And then in verse 27, Abner returns to Hebron. Now, why did Abner respond to the message? Maybe Joab said it was from David. If Abner has sworn loyalty to David, and he's gone off, and here's a message, dear Abner, please come back, there's something I need to tell you. He obeys, he does it. I think that's evidence that there has been a change in his heart. He is a man now acting under authority. He's told to return, so he does. And then we're told Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him privately. He barely gets into Hebron and there is Joab waiting for him. And even in the gate he calls him over for a private word. What's Abner thinking? Abner! You might think Abner is very naive. Or we should have seen that coming. And yet there is an innocence about that man now. He was a deceitful, manipulative, powerful man previously. Now he receives a message. He returns. He's beckoned to the gate. He walks over. He's become as innocent as a dove. Now we're told there that Joab, instead of speaking to him private, stabs him in the stomach. And there he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. Ah! Now the writer has provided us with a reason for the death. Joab is not really concerned about David. It's an act of petty revenge. There was a battle, and Joab had a brother called Asahel who was fleet of foot, and he chased Abner and killed him in battle. And now Joab wants to get his own back. And it is entirely unreasonable, even by the standards of the Bronze Age. When somebody is killed in battle, it was considered legal killing. Whatever you think of war, it was considered legal killing and not an act of murder. And therefore, no retribution should have been sought. Secondly, and unusually, before Asahel actually dies, Abner warns him off and gives him opportunity to quit. And Asahel refuses the opportunity and continues, and Abner finishes him off. Furthermore, it's unreasonable, because Joab failed to see that Abner's conversion was a blessing to David. His conversion was not to provide him with an outlet for revenge. And Joab has done something terrible here. He has murdered another human being for the sake of his own pride or his own honour. And he's used David's security as a pretext. Joab has become what he thinks Abner is. And Joab has demonstrated himself as a dishonourable man. Might there be another reason? Admittedly not supplied by the text. Abner is the captain, or has been the captain, of Ishbosheth's guard, his army. And Joab holds the same office in David's army. What if Joab has smelled a rival? A threat to his own prestige? Someone who will take away the glory and honour which is by right mine. And maybe even Asahel's revenge provided a convenient cover. So either Joab killed him because he was a spiteful, vengeful man when he had no business to do it. Or worse still, he was looking out for himself. We must be careful of the Joab complex. I've said previously, watch out for Abner. Now I say, watch out for Joab. And whereas Abner might be some kind of hireling, false prophet come to the church, Joab, I'm afraid, comes from within. I know pastors who don't like other preachers joining their congregation, lest they lose their preeminence. Or have you ever heard of people in a church complaining that new people are taking over? There's Joab. We've got to ask ourselves, are we serving Christ, or are we serving ourselves? Am I a servant of Jesus, or am I working for Marsden? Are we secretly trying to carve out for ourselves little places of honour in the Christian ghetto? Or are we soldiers under the command of a king, not operating independently of his authority, not sending out messengers and bumping people off to make ourselves look good? Even the disciples had a Joab complex. We're told in Luke 22, now there was also a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest.
Oh, Joab.
If in the Church of God you seek to be recognised for all that you do, you want to be respected. You want other people to know how good you are. You rob Christ of his glory. And from verse 28 we read David's reaction to this horrid murder. Upon hearing it, he says, "My kingdom and I are guiltless before the Lord forever of the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and all his father's house, and let there never fail to be in the house of Joab one who has a discharge or is a leper, who leans on a staff or falls by the sword, or who lacks bread." David is publicly distancing himself from Joab. Now remember, Joab is his servant. And the employer is held responsible for the actions of the employee. And David does not want to be tarnished with this horrid brush. The kind of king who murders his own subjects, who when people bow the knee to him and secretly kills them, how's that going to make David look among the tribes of Israel who are considering even now joining him? Well, if we join David, look what he'll do. He'll throw a feast for us and then bump us off the next day. Secondly, what Joab does is fundamentally unjust. David is God's regent in Israel, and therefore he must be a source of justice. And it is, of course, damaging his reputation, potentially. There might also be the development of another blood feud. Joab initiated it. What about the other sons of Ner? Might they seek revenge for Abner's death? Perhaps, but not. He won't come to me, says David. And he appeals to God as his witness. And then he, as a judge in Israel, pronounces judgment on Joab and the family. Which might appear to be unjust to us, that the descendants of Joab should be affected by that terrible action. But let's understand that sin does more damage than we imagine. The ripples of sin continue to expand long after we've forgotten the stone that went into the puddle. Look at Adam and Eve in Eden. We're still living with what they did. And yet also it was a family act. In verse 30 it says that Abishai, or indicates that Abishai, the other brother, joined in also. People back then liked to be judged on the quality of their children. And David is saying here, for killing a man, your own children will suffer the consequences of your actions. So, in Israel, in the Church of God, the gathering of God, there are problems and there are difficulties. But again, David is a young king. And God, as he always does, is teaching David how to be a king. And that sometimes means receiving an Abner and rejecting a Joab.